Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Hello everyone, welcome. Hope you had a fabulous week, and I hope that you have been paying attention to what has been going on in our country on the border. It is criminal, criminal, criminal. The sad part is our governors have a lot of power. They're not using it. And the biggest disappointment, I think, is Governor Abbott, because a lot of this he could have stopped a long time ago. That's their job. That's the 10th Amendment, that everything that does not belong to the federal government that has been laid out in the Constitution belongs to the states. And managing elections and managing education belongs to the states. Obviously, that's not happening when you have a communist regime in the House and in the Senate. And they think that they are know-it-alls, which I do not believe. I also do not believe that there are as many of them as they would like us to think. I believe that there are more of us. And to find out how much more, stay tuned. This is Karen Schoen. You are listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Thank you all for listening. We have a very special guest. I always enjoy when Chris Wright joins the show because he is so knowledgeable of communism, of the Constitution, and of the 10th Amendment. Chris, do you think that the governors can do a lot more than they're doing on the border, especially in view of the fact that these people all are coming in with, well, I won't say all, but are coming in with COVID?
Well, that's the basis of Governor Abbott's order in Texas, that it's a COVID emergency, and the federal government is letting all these people in and not checking their COVID status. And I'm remembering back a few years, and I guess it was during the Obama administration, when Jan Brewer was governor of Arizona. She tried to do some stuff at the border under state law, and she got shut down by the feds and slapped down by the Supreme Court. So it was interesting to me to read Governor Abbott's wrinkle on this, which is the COVID emergency. So we'll see if that one flies. But I want to thank you for having us back. I am the founder of the Anti-Communism Action Team. We are, I'll give all my commercials up front. We are an independent grassroots group dedicated to fighting communism at home and abroad. We started in 2013. We have a website, spiderinthefly.com, with dashes or hyphens between the words, spider, hyphen, etc. We have a free newsletter. The mailing list is free. Your contact information is never sold or shared. We have a speakers bureau, and we have one of our speakers here tonight that I'll be introducing to you. And we also are planning, we have a few webinars a year. We just had one on forced organ harvesting in China, and we have two more planned for the remainder of 2021. Now, tonight, we're going to break from our usual information-packed presentation, and we're going to learn some fun facts to know and learn about socialism. So we're going to have a little fun tonight. What we're going to do is Darian has written a fable that's on our website, Spider and the Fly. And so he's going to read that for us, perform that for us. Then we're going to administer ACAT's new socialism quiz to you, Karen, right here on the air.
Oh, boy.
Then we'll go back to Darian because he has quite a few thoughts about the ultimate fable of all, which is George Orwell's Animal Farm. And Darian has some personal experiences related to the book. So back to Darian's fable. We started this page on our website, Papa Joe's Story Hour, and it's all reference to Joseph Stalin. because we are convinced that there is power in storytelling, and you will reach some people with storytelling that you would not reach with straight exposition. Now, we got onto this approach because we have friends at another blog called Stories of Communism, and it's the only other truly grassroots anti-communist effort that I'm aware of that's organized and has been sustained for a number of years. And we help them, they help us, they're good people there. So this is Darian. Darian's going to perform for us his fable, and I'd like to introduce Darian. Darian escaped from Ukraine as an infant. He is an international energy consultant by trade, for example, serving as USAID's energy advisor to Ukraine and Moldova. His ongoing mission is to help the countries of the former Soviet Union democratize and overcome their failed communist systems. As a filmmaker, he has made documentaries on the legacy of the Soviet Union and its attempts to modernize. He is a published book author. His historical novel Escapes is available on Amazon, and it recalls the dangers his families faced in the time of Hitler and Stalin. And with that introduction, I'm going to turn this over to Darian, who will tell us a bit about his fable and then perform it for us. Go ahead, Darian.
Thanks for the nice introduction, Chris. Well, people sometimes grasp difficult truths or complicated situations through fables. It seems to somehow cut through a lot of complex issues and makes things clear. Okay, this fable is called The Fable of the Sheep, Sheepdogs, and Wolves. There was once a herd of fat sheep deep in the peaceful, picturesque countryside. Wolves had not been able to get close enough to drag off and eat one of their number in a long time. The sheep enjoyed a season of prolonged peace. In fact, with an outer cordon of sheepdogs faithfully keeping the ravenous wolves far away, sometimes even sacrificing their own lives, the terrifying attacks of bygone years had been pretty much forgotten. Until one evening, a woolly but awkward stranger appeared in the midst of the herd, leaner and taller than the other sheep, but with funny paws rather than hooves. He claimed he came as an emissary from a faraway herd and that he brought a message of freedom. A faction of the younger sheep listened enthralled as the stranger spoke of a new world and accused the sheepdogs of trying to restrict their freedoms. Truth be told, he sweetly snarled, there are no such things as wolves. So-called carnivores are nothing but sheep at heart. They're just our brothers and sisters, easily won over with our love. The problem is with the sheepdogs who have created artificial barriers between us. No, it's not so-called wolves who stand in our way, but the sheepdogs who divide us and control us for their own nefarious designs. That sounded just about right. A quorum of the sheep finally agreed among themselves that life would indeed be blissful without worrying about some imaginary wolves. After voting to build a new utopia by banishing the wicked sheepdogs forever, the sheep convened in a big inward-facing circle and bleated out the stanzas of John Lennon's song, Imagine. Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can. No need for greed and hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. And of course, the hungry pack of wolves approached unhindered. Moral of the story? The gullible always pay for their naivete.
Bravo. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Karen?
I am impressed. That was really great. That reminded me of when I was a kid growing up, and we used to read Aesop's fables all the time. And now today, our children are reading pornography instead. Unfortunately, I think the fable is great. I wish more of these. Are you going to write more of them?
No, I was saying, Chris, that we have another one in store here that Clara wrote, which is absolutely dynamite.
If you
would like to hear that one, Karen?
Absolutely. These are great.
Okay, let me just say a word about Clara Sever. She is a survivor of communism in Czechoslovakia, also a survivor of the Holocaust. She was hidden by a Catholic family in Czechoslovakia. She's Jewish. She has been with the Anti-Communism Action Team Speakers Bureau from the beginning. She was in our very first program in 2013. She has been instrumental in building our reputation. She got us into the Leadership Institute. So I can't say enough good about Clara Sever. And now we're going to hear from Darian, who will perform Clara's fable.
Yeah, it's a well-known title, The Princess and the Frog, but with a twist. Once upon a time, a charming young princess was taking a walk in her garden when she spotted an ugly frog. Mindful of her proper upbringing in the castle, she knew she must be nice to everyone. So she went up to the frog and gave him a friendly greeting. "Hello, how are you?" The frog blinked his very large eyes at her. Tears welled up, and he said to her timidly, "Hello to you too. Could you please kiss me?" "Why, whatever for?" the princess replied politely, quite taken aback. She had never talked to a frog before, but still she found his request oh so very strange. "Have you forgotten the fairy tale, silly? If you kiss me, I will become a prince." "Please," he pleaded pitifully, tears flowing copiously now. Oh, how the poor princess hated to see anyone suffer. She truly found the frog horribly ugly, revolting even. But her good heart and the frog's tears did the trick. She knelt on the grass, closed her eyes, and kissed the frog to put an end to his distress. The frog laughed. "Now we are equal, my darling," was all he said. The princess looked down and saw she had been turned into a frog. So we have come to the end of our riveting tale. The princess lived unhappily ever after as a frog. And there wasn't a darn thing she or anyone else could do anything about it. Moral of the story, fools and their freedom are soon parted.
Absolutely. Our children need to hear more of these. You should be putting a book together or maybe do a documentary, because these are the things that our children need to hear about. They need to be able to relate and understand, and they don't, because they are being bombarded by such atrocious things that it's very sad. And this is really great because I think it's uplifting and teaches a lesson, which you can talk about with your family. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Talk with your family? What's that?
That's on my to-do list. Everybody should talk to their family together at least once a week, even if it's a Zoom call. And then find out who can't read and teach that person to read, because our kids can't read. You'll be shocked when you see who can't read.
Well, Karen, we would love to do more fables. So if anyone in your audience has a knack for storytelling, please encourage them to get in touch with us. Our email address is mail@spiderandthefly, again, hyphens between the words, mail@spiderandthefly.com. And we can discuss another fable for Papa Joe's Story Hour on our website.
That would be great. And we have to get everybody to go to Papa Joe's. People have no idea, and yet our children are being taught that these people like Papa Joe are their heroes. How sad and twisted is that?
Pretty sad and twisted. Now, are you ready for your quiz?
Uh-oh. Let's go.
Okay. We put together a quiz this year. We administer it at booths. We've done this once. It was a conference in Pennsylvania I'll tell you about after the quiz. There are 10 questions. They're all fill in the blank. Are you ready for number one?
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
Okay, the Communist Manifesto was written by Karl Marx and Friedrich Blank in 1848.
Engel.
Very good. Okay. Let me start making your score here. Number two, the textbook definition of socialism is the common ownership of the means of blank.
Production.
Okay. Vladimir Lenin believed communism would be achieved through the dictatorship of the blank.
Working class.
Close enough.
Proletariat.
I'll give you half a point for working class.
Okay.
Mao's little red book says power grows out of the blank.
Out of the barrel of a gun.
Very good. Got another point. The slaughter of a quarter of the Cambodian population by Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge was known as the blank.
At the killing fields.
Very good. The group of British theorists who favored achieving socialism incrementally were known as the blank. Time's up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just drew a blank on that one.
The group of theorists who brought the ideas of Antonio Gramsci and cultural Marxism to the U.S. were known as the blank.
They were academia. Don't remember.
Okay. The rebuttal to the Communist Manifesto entitled The Law was written by Friedrich Blank in 1850.
Oh, gosh. Von something. I can't remember his name.
Sorry. Time's up. The failed American commune founded by Robert Owen that went through 7 constitutions in 4 years was located in blank, Indiana.
Ooh. Gary?
No. Last question. The utopian socialist Charles Fourier believed when socialism was achieved, the oceans would turn into blank.
Gold.
Gold?
Yeah, gold.
Sure you want to give that answer?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, that's not the right answer.
It's okay.
Let's see. You got a 4.5.
Uh-oh.
Now, let me tell you a few stories about this. Okay. So we did it for the first time at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference last month. And this was the audience was a conservative audience, and they're going to this conference. So, you know, they're tuned in. You'd think they'd be well informed. Guess what the average score of this audience was for this quiz?
4.5, 5?
No, 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I have an F and that's above average.
I was shocked.
That's terrible.
That such a supposedly knowledgeable audience would get a 3 on this quiz. And I thought when I made the quiz, I put in all the easy questions and I left all the hard questions at home. But the average score was 3. Now, the other story I want to tell you about, and I won't tell you his name, but I will tell you that a world-renowned anti-communist book author was at this conference. And we were talking a little bit, and then we were done talking, and I went back to my booth. And he comes up with 2 young students in tow, college students. And he says to me, "My students told me about this quiz. They want me to take this quiz." So here's this world-famous book author, and he took the quiz, and guess what score he got?
4.5, 5?
No, he got a 9.5. He was on the right track on the last question, but he missed the last question. So I gave him 0.5. But even he did not get a 10. So I thought that was kind of funny. And I was ribbing him. I told him, "I'm going to publicize this. I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to go on the radio. I'm going to use your name." But I told him I was kidding. I wasn't going to do that. But it's interesting that nobody's gotten a 10 on this quiz so far. Now, the questions you didn't get, the group of British theorists who favored incrementalism for socialism were the Fabians.
Oh, yes.
The group of theorists who brought cultural Marxism to the U.S. were known as the Frankfurt School.
I knew that one also.
The rebuttal to the Communist Manifesto, The Law, was written by Frederick Bastiat, some people say. It's probably more like Bastiat in French.
I know the law. Now, I know all these questions. What's wrong with me?
When I saw the date, his book, The Law, has been around in Tea Party circles from the beginning. But then I noticed the date, 1850, and I said, I wonder. And sure enough, when I went and looked it up, he had written it in direct response to the Communist Manifesto. And the big concept in his book is legal plunder, that the state ends up taking from some people and giving to another group of people. And so that was what he called legal plunder, which I think is a great phrase and really captures a lot. The ninth question, the failed American commune in Indiana was New Harmony, which is a whale of a story. It's told in a conservative history of the American left by, I'm blanking on them, Daniel Flynn. It's a great book. And the chapter on failed American communes is worth the price of the book all by itself. Now, finally, the last question, the utopian socialists believed the oceans, after socialism was achieved, the oceans would turn into lemonade.
Oh. Well, I have to be honest, I did not know the answer to the last two, but I should have known better the answers to the other ones, because I really did know what they were. But I did not know that about that in Indiana. How interesting. I did know that we have a Russia, a Moscow in Idaho. And I know we have, I think it was another Russian name, I can't remember, emulated. Also, they always advertised as sister cities. They corresponded back and forth. Isn't that nice?
You mean one in the Soviet Union and one?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Huh? Moscow, I believe it's Idaho. And this was a brainchild of, I think it was Eisenhower, to integrate the Russian, to befriend the Russian people. Anyway, they came back from Russia. He sent them on a trip to Russia. They came back from Russia and they created the mess that we have today in our education system.
Karen, if we have a few minutes left, I'd like to go back to Darian.
Absolutely, Darian.
Has a few thoughts about Animal Farm. Go ahead, Darian.
Yeah, thank you. When Animal Farm first came out, first of all, it was very, very difficult for him to find a film, to find a publisher. He just went through a lot of publishers who refused to publish because they didn't want to offend anyone. And when it was finally published, the people who read it recognized it immediately as this is one of the best metaphors you could possibly find for how the Soviet Union actually was. And it's one of those kinds of things like The Frog and the Prince or The Fable of the Sheep. It's like when you read it, you recognize everything. The first people that I know of was, I'm Ukrainian American. Some of the first people who actually took to the book were people who had escaped from the former Soviet Union right after World War II, and their fate was very much at play, because the Americans didn't know really how to deal with them, because Stalin wanted them back mainly for execution and mainly for being sent to the labor camps. So when these people found the book, they immediately contacted George Orwell, and George Orwell wrote an introduction, the only introduction he ever wrote to the book. And the book, the first translation was into Ukrainian. And with this book, they wanted to go to the authorities, the American authorities, and to convince them that their fate was really precarious and to please be on their side and not to have Uncle Joe send them all back to the Soviet Union. Really intriguing thing about George Orwell, though, is that people think of him as an ardent anti-communist. I thought so also until recently. George Orwell actually was a dedicated Marxist. He was really upset with how the Soviet Union turned out because he believed that Stalin botched a beautiful dream. That's why the book is full of so much caustic fury and anger, because his dream was broken. When I visited I worked while the Soviet Union was still the Soviet Union, I worked there once and I had to go to had to meet with the Ministry of Radio and Television. And also there were private people that I met with, and it was quite obvious what the incredible distinction was between the haves and the have-nots. And the haves were the ones who belonged to the Communist Party, and the have-nots were everybody else who were hoping to find the next pair of shoes to wear, maybe something they could trade to get milk for their children and that kind of a thing. You sensed the fear of the police state. And you, when you returned back to your room, you just felt it. You felt this incredible fear, what it's like to live in the Soviet Union. And I picked up the book for the second time. The first time I read Animal Farm, I think I was required to in college. And I thought, yeah, pretty cool fable. But then to actually be there and to experience it, as I read the book, it recapitulates the history of the Soviet Union through various animals, and you can guess immediately what the animals are. One of the first books that people in the Soviet Union back at that time, books that they wanted, books that were forbidden, they asked for. Number one usually was the Bible, and number two very often was Animal Farm.
I'm going to have to ask everyone to hold that thought. Don't go away. Don't touch that dial. We will be right back. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education with my guests, Chris Wright and Darian Dychuk. Be right back.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education and my guests, Chris Wright and Darian Dychuk. We had been talking in the last segment about Animal Farm and how it applied to the way that the Russians were ruled under communism. And I began to think that maybe the Americans are being ruled the same way. So instead of having different species of animals, they have picked race, but it's still the same division. And there's still the haves and the have-nots, and the oppressed and the oppressors, and the victims and the perpetrators. So it's always going to be the same. Maybe we should understand that sadly is the way the world is. You will always have people who are taking advantage of other people. That's human nature. We hope that through teaching and through education and through guidance from your God, that you would not do the harmful things. However, communism does not believe in God. So when you don't believe in God, anything goes. And I think, unfortunately, that's what we're seeing in America right now. Darian, can you enlighten us on some of the things that you discovered?
Well, yeah, we were just talking about Animal Farm, and about there are many parallels in Animal Farm to what's going on today. There's a really interesting thing about what prompted George Orwell to write Animal Farm. As you know, he was in his youth, he was an idealist, very much the way Winston Churchill said, if you're 20 and not a socialist, you don't have a heart. Of course, he followed up by saying, when you're 40 and still a socialist, you don't have a brain. But when he was young, he was very much of an idealist. And he actually joined the Spanish Civil War on the side of the communists, as did Ernest Hemingway. A lot of young people were very idealistic at that time, probably still are. But turned George Orwell against the Soviet Union was that during the Spanish Civil War, the Russians were helping the communist side, but Stalin was very much afraid that a communist rival, would spring up in Russia, and so he started a purge in Spain. So the communists in Spain who were not aligned with his thought were purged, and when he saw that, that communism as it was practiced is extremely intolerant. It's we are seeing some of that right now in our own cancel culture. If you're not completely attuned to the party line, you have a very good chance of losing your job. There are other things that are going on in the Soviet Union that we see either in their nascent form right now or very quickly picking up steam. Like the Soviet Union had a war on human nature, where they wanted to create the new Soviet man. We have something like that too here going on in the United States, where everyone's gender is fluid and we're going to create a new human being which is free of gender. It's extremely similar to both what was going on in Germany and going on in Russia at the time. This attempt to completely remake the human being. There was also like the development of an elite. Communism promised equality. Instead of equality, it produced one of the most striking examples of a powerful, rich elite with a completely destitute mass of people, exactly opposite of what they promised. Today, it appears to me that we're seeing something similar going on in the United States, where during the COVID period, vast numbers of the middle class businesses have dried up. In the meantime, in the same time, some of the elite companies have grown fatter and richer, and the distance between rich and poor has actually increased. And the elite in the United States, the business elite, as you in the United States, seems to be very, very pro socialism. So we're seeing the development of that too.
I'd like to jump in here if I could, Karen.
Yes, please.
I have some thoughts on this equality business under socialism. You all have probably heard the saying, "The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution." You must have heard that, right?
Yes.
Well, my twist on that is the issue is never the issue. The issue is always wealth and power for a tiny elite. So these socialists run around talking about how equal everybody's going to be. But you get right down to it and you look at the leaders, they're not playing that game. They're playing a game where they're going to get all the wealth and all the power for themselves. And you can see it in socialist country after socialist country. So what's interesting about that is that in Animal Farm, the last scene, if you recall, was the pigs standing up on 2 feet. They're in the farmhouse. They're around the dining table and they're drinking champagne. They're toasting each other with champagne. And there's always that always arises in a socialist country, a new elite. So there becomes a new inequality. And in the Soviet Union, they were called the apparatchiks. These were people who administered all the central planning and whatnot. They had dachas, the summer houses on the beach. And so all this business about there's going to be equality is just nonsense. And you can see it in Cuba. Michael Moore told a big fat lie in his movie Sicko when he was filming the healthcare facilities. They were actually for the elite, and Moore tried to pass them off as the healthcare facilities for the ordinary person. So for the elite, there's always it's a great gravy train. You get to lock up all the wealth and power. But for everybody else, as my Venezuelan friends put it to me, it's the equal distribution of misery. That's what goes on.
Or meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Nothing changes. And all we do is pass the baton from one elite to the other until maybe now. Because now we have to have action. What would you suggest people do, Darian?
I think we have to get beyond looking for solutions from the federal government, because the federal, I think the whole approach that the COVID pandemic played showed that federal government is not at all interested in the middle class, in middle class businesses and middle class wealth. It's interesting. I would say that it has to be developed locally. It has within the states, at a lower level than the federal level.
So you're looking for people to get involved in their local politics and understand what's going on, so that when these policies come down, you can protect your state, your county, your community against some of these policies, especially the grants that are nothing more than a land grab for anyone that is foolish enough to take one. That's what those are designed for. But if we don't share that information and get involved locally, statewide, you're right. There's very little that, other than voting and making sure we have voter integrity, there's very little that we can do on a federal level, but there's plenty that we can do on a state and local level. I agree with you.
I would give a slightly different answer. I would encourage people to look at the resources on our website, spiderinthefly.com, with hyphens between the words. We have a weekly news roundup. You can arm yourself with the latest, all the bad news from the communist world and the communists in the United States. We have that on there. Please tell people about our fables so you can reach other people with the storytelling aspect of things, and attend our webinars. And people stay on after our webinars, and a bit of a community has developed after, when we have our post-webinar chats. So I would encourage people to avail themselves of the resources of the Anti-Communism Action Team. And let's get back some, grab back some mindshare.
I think that's a great idea and very important, and we'll put it on my newsletter so that it goes out every week and people will get used to going there, because what Chris is talking about is being informed. When you are informed in the truth, there isn't very much that anybody can do. They can call you a lot of names, they can say a lot of things, but all they are is words, because you still have the truth. And the great thing about the truth is that once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. So time for that to be happening now, and time for us to be sharing and spreading the truth. And we have a lot to talk about, especially when it comes to the election and thought control. I mean, the censorship, they're doing that through thought control. I know you did a spot on that, Chris.
I did. If you'd like to hear it now.
Absolutely.
Okay. I write a daily commentary. It appears on my personal website, liberato.us, L-I-B as in boy, E-R-A-T as in Tom, O.us. Just a little bit of background for me, for your listeners. I come out of the Tea Party movement, been doing this 80 hours a week for 12 years, started a number of things like the local Tea Party here in Northern Virginia, the Anti-Communism Action Team with Darian Diachok as one of our speakers. I have some a nonprofit that funds the best grassroots fighters I can find. So I have a whole grassroots operation going, and part of it is a daily commentary. And I did one recently. This was about 10 days ago or so, on thought control, the American left's attempt at thought control. The Soviet Union tried to control everyone's thoughts, but the whole kit and caboodle went kaput after 75 years. There were two main newspapers, Pravda and Izvestia, which was supposed to be the truth and the news. They were anything but. Today, we explore some of the ways the authoritarian left is attempting thought control in America. One technique is the big lie, as in tell a lie loud enough and often enough, it becomes the truth. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Joe Biden ran on a platform of boosting funds for law enforcement, and the Republicans spent decades trying to defund the police. Nice try, but Joe Biden called the police the enemy and proposed redirecting police funding elsewhere. As for Republicans trying to defund the police, what planet is Jen Psaki from? As at least House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn admitted, the defund the police narrative is costing Democrats lots of votes. Another big lie is the assertion by Joy Reid and others, critical race theory is not being taught in schools. One small problem, the teachers union recently adopted a plan to spend big bucks to oppose attempts to ban critical race theory in schools, and teachers rallied in 22 cities to support CRT. Another big lie is being told by Democrats who now say they were never against voter ID when they are on record saying they were. Thought control can't work unless the thoughts one wishes to impose are ubiquitous. Sometimes it seems the American left has succeeded in this. You can hardly turn around these days without bumping into left-wing ideas. Think your library is neutral territory? Think again. The American Library Association says you're not a librarian unless you're a social justice warrior engaging in critical librarianship. And they're serious about it. You can get fired if you don't toe the line. And to think I used to work for those creeps. As actor John Voight has noted, left-wing ideas come at you from the media, the schools, and universities. If you don't espouse the left's party line, big tech will cancel you and you won't get a job in Hollywood. One small recent example from the media, 14-year-old Zyla Avant-Garde recently won the National Spelling Bee. NPR loves pointing out the fact she's a minority. That fits the left's narrative. But NPR won't tell you she's being homeschooled. You're not being allowed to know that because you might get your own ideas and leave the government indoctrination centers, aka the public schools, yourself. We have to control the information you receive, you see. Another recent example, Wikipedia's co-founder recently warned the online encyclopedia is more one-sided than ever, and its information sources are now almost exclusively globalist and progressive, that is, left-wing. So there are still some dissenting voices left, which is good news. As long as there is a single contrary voice remaining, thought control can't work. Speaking of indoctrination in education, a Roosevelt University professor recently got caught bragging about how she beats social justice ideology into students all day, every day. A colleague joined in describing how he turned a public budgeting class into indoctrination sessions on social justice and collectivism. These two serve on the local school board. The left owns public education, which makes homeschooling more attractive by the day. The Howard Zinn Education Project has students role play how to design a better reparations bill to replace weak reparations bills currently circulating in Congress. In this exercise, there is no debate about whether reparations should be paid in the first place. One last technique to cap things off for today. The left loves to erase history so you don't know who you are, where you came from, or what you stand for. The latest example is the New Jersey school district that voted to remove the names of all religious and secular holidays from the school calendar. The calendar now refers to those days as days off. But if they really want to be inclusive and equitable, they should issue Mao jackets to all the students and only refer to them by number. It's that old saying, if you don't know what you stand for, you'll fall for anything, even the globalist, progressivist garbage coming at us from every direction these days. No dissenting voices, please. Folks, we can't just drift without a foundation. We don't want to find out the hard way. We only have 75 years before we go kaput, do we?
You are so right. That is absolutely right on, folks. And that's our problem. We have to start speaking out. We can no longer be the silent majority. And I also believe that we have to start taking back our language. Every time we hear Jim Crow, I correct them and I say that you mean the Democrat Jim Crow? We have to label things as to where they are and label our enemies. If we don't label our enemies, who are we fighting? That's the sad part. And Chris, they are doing a stellar job of thought control. They really are. Sadly, mostly with our children. And that's the sad part of all of this. And they are changing the culture of America. They're changing the soul of America. And unless we stand up, there won't be an America to stand up for. And I really believe that, and as much as I hate to say that, we have what's going on with voter suppression. People, we have to get involved. You've got to get involved in what's going on in your state because they're lying everywhere. No matter, and I'm sure you have experienced the same thing too, Chris. They're lying about people wanting or not wanting IDs for voting. People want them.
Well, they are lying. And Stacey Abrams finally came out and said voter ID is not racist. and there was some other Democrat, prominent Democrat, who made the same admission recently. And it's funny to see all the Democrats now, some of them falling all over themselves to backtrack and say, oh, no, I never said that, when they're on record as saying that they were.
That's the only thing that's different from today to the 60s. We didn't have that instant gratification of the film that you could see immediately what somebody said, so that you can say, liar, liar, this is what you really said. We didn't have that in the 60s when this was going on. Other than that, it's almost identical. The playbook is almost identical. And Darian, it was very curious when you mentioned John Lennon's song Imagine, because in the 60s, Bill Ayers went to John Lennon and asked him to write a song for the revolution. And John Lennon did, and he called it Revolution. And when Bill Ayers read what John Lennon wrote, he was furious. So I suggest to everyone, you go and read and listen to John Lennon's idea of revolution. You'll be quite surprised.
Yeah, John Lennon was very, very clear-headed about what revolutions really were. When he said, if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I got to tell you, brother, you'll have to wait. It's going to be all right. That was his message. Of course, he went off into his belief in utopia, but he saw clearly what revolutions do.
Yes, and he wasn't into changing the Constitution, and he wasn't into bowing to Chairman Mao. So he knew what communism was, because remember, even though England was a, quote, free country, part of the Western Bloc, England was still a socialist country living under a monarchy. And not only it was that, different at that time.
Not only that, Karen, they had a song on the Revolver album, I think it was, Taxman. And they wrote that song, mm-hmm. The Beatles did, because they were being taxed in excess of 90% by the socialist British government at the time. They were getting fed up with it. So they wrote Taxman.
And that's when they moved to America. And I believe Lennon was banned from America at that time for something. I don't remember what. Maybe I think it might have been marijuana, but I don't remember. Anyway, that's, yes, you are absolutely right. The music I listen to, classic rock on the weekends, and a lot of it because it was written in this time, and the message of the people who were the musicians was very different than the message today, because it wasn't so much that these people were not patriots. They just hated the system. They weren't into hate the people. They were into hating the system, which is a lot different than what's going on today, because today our people are being taught to hate each other. And if you hate your neighbor, where are you going to go? If you're being taught to spy on your neighbor, where are you going to go? We can't have that. And that is, I believe, what is going on. I don't know. What do you think, Chris? Are we into the woke culture that is going to destroy America? Or are there things that we can do about it?
Well, I get this comment from my circles from time to time. Oh, look at the forces arrayed against us. They're too powerful. I give up. I quit. And if I believe that, I just go and shoot myself in the head. But I don't believe that. I think we can still turn things around through shows like this and the efforts of all of us. I will tell you, I'm an equal opportunity critic. I think there are lots of failings of the Republican Party. There are lots of failings of the professional right. And there are lots of failings of the grassroots right. The grassroots right has not done what it's supposed to do to maintain the constitutional republic for the last 50 years. And it's time that people stop thinking about, oh, let's impeach Joe Biden, and instead roll up their sleeves and get involved in the local Republican Party, or focus on your town's budget. Start being a critic of your town's budget. I know somebody who did that, in a Tea Partier who did that in California. He ended up advising several towns on their budget. Do the things that are necessary to maintain the republic and we'll be fine. But one frustration I have is that I run into all these people that are on a slightly different wavelength. And anybody who's tried to organize anything on the political right knows it's like trying to herd cats. So, folks, we need to get on the same wavelength. We need to roll up our sleeves and do the things that are really required to maintain the republic.
I could not agree more. And sometimes it's better to join something that's in existence than trying to start your own. The idea is to be network. And if you're always doing your own thing and you're not willing to share with others, which is the problem of individualism, you don't share well. You don't play well with others. So you got to put that aside right now, because we all have a common thing. And since we're the best of the best, we should be able to solve that problem. And I know, and I see, I'm sure that you do, Darian and Chris, I think that Americans are beginning to understand what's going on. And as I said in the beginning of the show, there are more of us than them. And we have to act like it. We have to start taking back and taking control and not standing up for the garbage that they're giving us. And one of the things you just said, Chris, was really good. Because people go to your precincts and join your precinct, and you will find that many of the precincts are vacant. And that's how the rhinos get control, because nobody's there. Well, if there's nobody there and you're giving your control and your power to somebody else, then you can't be surprised when they take it from you. So if you want your power, go take it back. Join your precinct. And participate. America is a participation sport. It's not something that you can sit back on. We have to fight for freedom every day. It doesn't come easy, but man, it is certainly worth it. Chris, Darian, we're coming to the end of our show. Would you like to give everyone a few parting words and tell everyone where they can find you again, Chris?
Sure, I'll let Darian go first, and I have two thoughts.
Sure. Just from a historical perspective, I think once communism fell, once the wall fell, it appeared that the victory of Margaret Thatcher in England and Ronald Reagan in the United States, with their ideas of individual liberty and free markets, that we triumphed. And it looked like, okay, the war is over, we've won. But in the meantime, at the same time, the left was very, very busy at work. And one of the major things that they did under our noses was take control of education. And during that intervening period, like a generation or two, they indoctrinated the American youth. Instead of being aware of what the war was, what the ideological war was between East and West, between communism and individual freedom, instead of indoctrinating or teaching young people about that, they switched topics to global warming, to race theory, and to just how evil the American beginnings were. They did a remarkably good job. My son, who when he was 12 years old or 13 years old, used to laugh at the left, at how silly they were. He went to college, and after 4 years, he became indoctrinated. And now I have to spar with him. They were very successful. That happened underneath our noses. So, yeah, we have to realize that the war is not over. That the left found some very, very clever ways to undermine us, and it's back to the battlefield.
Yes, communism is open 24/7. They never sleep, Chris.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to a couple things you were saying about activism, Karen. People may not care about politics, but I assure you, politics cares about you. So it was some ancient Greek, I'm forgetting who, said something like, if you don't get involved in the governance of your country, then you are doomed to be governed by your inferiors. So
I'll tell you who that was if I can get a point.
Okay. Raise your score to 5.5.
It was Plato.
Okay, very good. The last thing I wanted to say, I wanted to go back to the Beatles for a minute. And Karen, you were talking about networking. I hit upon this networking formula some years ago and as being the solution to this problem of trying to herd cats on the grassroots political right. And I liken it to a rock band. So a rock band, they have their solo albums, but every once in a while they get together and they do an album as a band or a concert tour as a band. And that's what the Beatles did. George Harrison had his solo albums, but you know, they kept doing albums as the Beatles, Abbey Road. So that to me is what people on the grassroots right need to do. We need to network in that way. And I would say my parting advice is to people, your listeners, don't try to start something new. Everybody does that. Everybody disappears after a year. Join something that's existing and help them help them reach their goals. That would be my advice.
That would be wonderful. Tell everyone where they can find you, Chris.
Sure. We are the Anti-Communism Action Team. We are at it's www.spiderandthefly.com with hyphens between the words, spider hyphen, etc. spiderandthefly.com.
Thank you both for joining me. This is Karen Schoen. You have been listening to the Prism of America's Education. Your homework for this week is to join something in your community. Hopefully join your local precinct. But if that's not possible, join something else. Get involved. You're not going to solve anything by sitting on the couch. Have a great week, folks. See you again next week.
But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America. Don't tread on me. I'm America. Yes, America.